time, it is my pleasure to introduce our main speaker, Jack G. from Huntington Beach.
Thanks. Hi, I'm Jack Grisham, and I'm an alcoholic. And I want to thank you guys for having me back again. That's nice to be asked to come back. That's rare, but it's nice. And I really enjoyed the birthdays. I like it when they don't say anything, and there's a reason why I like that, because I don't think we had much to do with it at the start and why we got here. Where I live down in Huntington Beach, and in my neighbor, like close by my neighborhood, we've got a lot of river ditches that go by, right? They're like rivers, but they're dry. I mean, I live in Huntington Beach. There's nothing in it. But in the winter, then they fill up with water, right? And every year, these guys get down in the ditches, and they drown down in the ditch. I don't know why they go down there, but they do. And there was this guy a couple of years ago, and he got down in the ditch, and so he was dying, right? I mean, the water's freezing cold, and he's in the ditch, and we have, like, rescue crews that come out and save these guys. They actually train for it because it's so common that these guys get in these ditches, man. And so this guy's going down the water, and he's going to die because a kid just died 2 weeks ago in the same ditch in the same thing, and this guy knows it. And he's going down the same ditch, and he's scared to death. And they're throwing ropes off bridges trying to get this guy. Well, these firemen throw this rope off a bridge, and by some luck, he grabs a hold of that rope. And he squeezes onto it with every little bit of thing he's got. He's hanging onto that rope, and it starts pulling him off. The rope starts pulling him up, and he loses his pants. His pants come off, right? But he ain't pulling them up. You know what I mean? It's like he swings around and does a full frontal nudity shot right into the camera, and he doesn't care. And he hangs onto that rope, and they pulled him up, and they got him on that bridge. And the minute he got on that bridge, he didn't say, "Hey, let me tell you how I did it." He said, "Thank you for throwing the rope. Thank you for saving my life." And that's what Alcoholics Anonymous did for me. I don't get up on the bridge and tell you how I did it. You know, you guys saved my ass. I was drowning. I was being swept down. I knew I was going to die. You guys threw out a rope, and by some luck, I grabbed it. And a lot of my friends didn't grab it. They never grabbed it. They weren't capable of grabbing it. The book talks about that. I hear guys come into the program sometimes, and they say, "Well, if I could do it, anybody could do it." And the book disagrees with that. It says there's some people that can't or won't. They couldn't or wouldn't grasp this simple program. Today's Thursday, I guess. I'm not good on the dates. And I think it's the 30th. So what you're getting out of me is Jack Grisham on Thursday, the 30th of 2007, which could possibly be completely different than what you're going to get out of me tomorrow. And because I'm constantly running into people that change my opinion and my perception of what's going on in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I give a lot of opinion. I like to warn people sometimes I'm going to get a little opinion card to hold up here, you know, so you know it's my opinion. And it does change frequently. And I'll tell you, one of the cool things I learned about that opinion deal is one time I was building something out in my backyard, and I'm hammering it, and I'm building all this stuff, right? And my little kid comes out, and she's just little, and she walks out, and she goes, "That looks like a boat." Well, it wasn't a boat, right? But I looked at it, and I go, "God damn," I go, "it does look like a boat. Let's make a boat." And so I flipped it over, and it turned into a boat. And anyway, so that's what the program has been for me this last 18 and a half years. One day it's this, and it's this, and it's this, and I know it's this, and I swear to God it's this. And all of a sudden someone walks up and goes, "Hey, I think it's this." And all of a sudden, boom, it changes, and now it's this. And it can be anybody. I hear guys around here sometimes, they don't want to listen to what new people say, and they don't want to hear the new person. But the trouble is with that is when the new man comes in, they have a completely clear and fresh view of what Alcoholics Anonymous is supposed to be about. And sometimes we get so jaded, we're around here and we just listen to us yapping and yapping and yapping and patting each other on the back for what a great job we're doing here in AA. And we're not really listening a lot of times to what people are saying about us and what they think about us. I had this guy I was sponsoring one time, and somebody asked him a question. They said, do you want what your sponsor's got? And so I'm waiting for this guy to say nice stuff about me. You know, I'm kind of like turning around like this, listening a little bit, because I like hearing nice stuff. I don't believe it. I believe the bad more, but I like the nice too. So anyway, I'm waiting to hear this guy tell this other guy how great I am, right? And he goes, "Nah, I don't want what my sponsor's got." I go, "Son of a bitch." You know, I mean, I'm mad for a second. I'm taking this guy's calls every day, right? And then he goes, "I didn't get my sponsor because I want what he's got. I got my sponsor because he's got what I've got." What a beautiful concept. That was the whole deal with Bill and Bob. when Bill and Bob first sat down at the table, the reason Bob got the program is because he believed for once in his life that here was another man sitting across the table that had what he had, the power to convince. You hear people around here all the time saying, I'm powerless. But the book says that we do get power. We get a lot of power. We get power to work with new men, power to change people's lives, power to convince them unlike anyone else can. That's what we get in Alcoholics Anonymous when we get in here and we start sharing our stories. And I get a little mad about what we do to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I know we're not supposed to have any opinion on outside issues, but I got a ton of opinions on inside issues. And I don't like what we do to the program. What I like, it's a fun game to play. If you ever get a chance, get on your computer and type in F... AA and see what comes up, right? And see what people say about us and see how they attack us. And do you know what? They don't attack us for abandoning ourselves to God. You aware of that? They don't attack us for that. They don't attack us for admitting our faults to our fellows, to God and our fellows. We're not attacked for that. We're not attacked for clearing away the wreckage of our past. And we are not attacked for sharing freely of what we have. What we're attacked for is what we've done to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. How we have taken that beautiful book and how we abuse that book and how we abuse power and how we abuse the trust that's given to us by the new man when they come in here. And I have a real problem with that because you guys saved my life and you guys gave me a family. You know, and in my story, I like talking about my kids and I like talking about the beach, you know, because that's what you guys have given me. You guys have given me a life that's unbelievable, and I don't like anybody messing with it. I don't like anybody screwing with my program, and I don't like anybody screwing with the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I believe in that book with all my heart, and it has been the hardest thing to follow in my whole life. Real quick, I'll tell you my opinion on how the program's supposed to work. If you're new here, welcome. Welcome, and I'm glad that our first speaker said that you are important, but that you're not the most important person in the room. When you're brand new, the very first lie you're going to be told in Alcoholics Anonymous is that you're the most important person in this room, and that is a lie. That is a lie. Don't believe it. You are no more important than anyone else sitting in this room. In Alcoholics Anonymous, we have a genuine democracy. One man does not come before another man in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. We walk side by side. We're taught right away that you must be rid of self. So when we come up and we start to tell the new man, you're important, and then the book says, no, you're not. Our traditions say, no, you're not that important. The group comes before the individual in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, real quick, I'll tell you how I got here. I was 26 years old, and I was living at my mother's house. And thank God for my mom, man. The Al-Anon people never got a hand on my mom. She is the best drunk's mom in the world. I'll match my mom. And there's people in here that know her. She's out of her mind, man. And my mom was the best. It's like I would go to jail, and when I'd get out, my mom would go, they're always picking on you, sweetheart. You know, like one of those moms. And I'd be in the neighbor's lawn, and the neighbor, I'd be passed out on the lawn on another morning. And my mom, they'd complain, and my mom would go, leave him alone. He's an artist. He's a pioneer. You know, like that kind of mom, you know, and just full insanity going on in the house. And she totally put up with it. You know what I mean? It was just part of the deal. And I'll tell you how I even got to with you guys. I mean, I've had this disease forever. You know what I mean? I might have started drinking later on in life. I think I took my first hit of weed when I was 5, but it was much later. You know, I was getting first sip off dad's beer and all that business. But I was born a selfish, self-centered prick. I came out that way. You know what I mean? I wanted to go back in the minute I got out. I didn't want any part of this deal, man. And I was having trouble from the start. They were sending me to therapy in third grade. They were trying to get me straightened out. You know, for years they've been trying to get me straightened out, you know. Always just that selfish, self-centered. It's all about me. It's all about me. It's all about me. I'm living at my mom's house. Here's how I got to the program. A buddy of mine, I'm 26 years old, living at mommy's. A buddy of mine gets busted out in front of my mom's house on a cocaine trafficking charge. Now, it's funny to me, because he's a cute little surfer boy from Long Beach, right? And I'm straight calling him cute. He's not that cute anymore. But back then, you know, curly blonde hair and freckles, and he's not going to do well in L.A. County, if you know what I'm saying, right? So I think it's pretty funny that he gets busted, right? He gets busted, and he goes to court. Now, here's an opinion. I believe that more alcoholics are created in court than anywhere else in the world. It's not the first drink. It's not the local bar. It's court. Because hundreds of thousands of us go into court every day non-alcoholic. And we get in front of the judge. Judge goes, Mr. Smith, you're looking at a year's sentence. But if you're an alcoholic, you could do a 60-day treatment program. I'm an alcoholic, sir. That's so sad because you guys are in here, I know. And, you know, so it's like, yeah, I'm an alcoholic, right? I'm an alcoholic. So it's so funny. You know, I said that at a meeting one time, and this guy walks up to me afterwards. He's got tattoos from the neck down, right? And he walks up to me and goes, I did the year, dog. Well, then you're a stupid alcoholic, champ. I don't know what to tell you, bro. You know, I say, if you don't even got enough game to cop a plea to get out, you're dumb, man. You might as well go sit in there and get a date or something, whatever you're going to do up in there. But anyway, so my buddy was smart enough to say he's got a problem. So they send him off to treatment. Judge says, okay, you're going to treatment. They send him off to treatment, Warm Springs in California. And you guys get up there and you do all that healing on them you do on these guys up in those detoxes and stuff. You get them all healed up and ready to go, and they kick him out, and he comes back to Long Beach with this walking hand in hand with Bill, Bob, and Jesus trip. Do you know what I mean? Like, and he's gonna save the neighborhood. Right? You know when the new man gets sober and then all of a sudden he wants all his buddies sober too? You know, you got to come down to the meeting with me, bro. You know, all that kind of business. They get all fired up. They want to start saving people. Well, that's my buddy's deal. He wants to start saving people. So where's his first stop? It's my mom's house. That's stop number one, right? And I get this. I go, hey, what's up? He goes, you got a problem, dude. I go, what? And he goes, you're an alcoholic, man. You're an addict. I go, no, I'm not. I live with my mom. What are you talking about? Well, let me tell you what was going on at mommy's house, why this was going on. I'm living with my mother. My father had died in 1984, and I was blamed for his death in a court case due to the stress that I had put on my dad. I'm living there at my mom's house. I got warrants out for my arrest. I got people trying to kill me, both real and imagined, both of the types, right? And the bad thing about imaginary kill you guy night is, if you call your buddies over, if anybody's gonna get ready to relapse, take this into advice. If you call your buddies over on imaginary guy night, it's real hard to get them to come over on real guy night. You know what I mean? It's like, no, they're out there, man. They're really out there. Just lay down, Jack. Come on, man, just lay down, bro. So anyway, so I got warrants out for my arrest. I got people trying to kill me, real and imagined. I can't hold a job. I get a girl pregnant, one of the many women I was sleeping with at the time. I said, move in. Come on and move into my mom's house. Let's have the baby. I move her in. At the same time I move her in, I meet an underage girl on the street. I fall in love with her and take her to Mexico and marry her. That's what's going on at mommy's house. And this guy's telling me I got a problem? You know what I mean? It's like, dude, you know? And we're arguing about it. We're actually in the front yard arguing about whether or not I got a problem or not. And we're arguing. He goes, go to a meeting. I'm like, a meeting? A meeting of what? What do you mean meeting, right? He goes, come on, go down the meeting, 12-step. Come on, go down the meeting. I'm like, what? And we're arguing back and forth about me going to this meeting. Now, for some reason, I said, okay, I'll go. Well, why? I don't know why. I don't even like him. He's smaller than me. You know what I mean? He's got a big mouth. I don't like him. And I said I'd go, and I don't know why I said I'd go, but I did. And he went one way, and I went the other way. And when I was walking towards the house, I had a moment of clarity or a spiritual awakening. We use a lot of words in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we take these words for granted. We walk around here, moment of clarity, spiritual awakening, moment of clarity, spiritual awakening, relapse. And the new man's not really sure what the hell we're talking about. You know what I mean? We take it for granted because we say those words all the time. For the new guy here, sometimes a spiritual awakening is just that, waking up. Waking up. The book talks about us being incapable of being able to see the truth about ourselves, of honesty, appraisal of ourselves. I believe that we're all incapable up to a certain amount of time before we wake up and see the truth about ourselves. I woke up just a little bit that day, and thank God I didn't wake up all at once. Could you imagine if you woke up your very first day in Alcoholics Anonymous? I mean, really woke up when you came in here. That would be frightening. It would be frightening. When the secretary is up here, she'd be going, yes, and we have cookie, coffee, and rope for the new man in the back. You can hang yourself or go one more day here, champ. Because I'll tell you, waking up to this disease is bad news, and it's very frightening. There's a great story in the big book about a guy that hasn't woken up yet. The guy with the tornado, right? And he's down in the cellar, and the wind's going nuts, and he comes out, and he looks around, and he goes, yeah, yeah, it's all right. Look at this. It's all right. It's going to be all right. Wind stopped blowing. It's not all right, dude. Your pony's gone, champ. The house is gone. Everything is gone. They're incapable of seeing the truth about what's really going on. And I'll tell you, I love Dr. Paul dearly. I used to call Paul, and I love him dearly, man. But I'll tell you, they should put a lock and key on Paul's story. A lock and key on Paul's story and not let you read it until you've been sober about 5 or 6 years. Because they get that whole story mixed up. The new man gets that story mixed up, and that's the first place they go running is to Paul's story. I got to accept. I'm accepting. And what they don't realize is acceptance does not mean approval. Acceptance means belief. Two completely different things. Because you get guys in Alcoholics Anonymous accepting all kinds of crap that they shouldn't be accepting. You know, I walk into prison sometimes. I'll walk in, I'll see somebody on the yard. I'll go, how you doing? Doing great, Jack. Doing good. You're in prison, champ. Are you aware that you're in prison here? How good are you doing, bro? You know what I mean? You walk into a recovery house, you see guys, how's it going? Oh, it's going great, man. You're sleeping in a room with 6 other dudes. Last I checked, that wasn't cool. You know what I mean? What are you doing? The inability to wake up to see the truth about ourselves. I talked to a guy the other day, and he said to me, I go, what's going on? He goes, oh, it's okay, man. He goes, I got some warrants, and my insurance just went, and I got this girl pregnant, and my baby mom, and she's pregnant, but then I got the baby mama, and she's over here, and now I'm seeing this girl right here. He goes, but it's going to be all right, man. I'm total acceptance. What part of that's all right, champ? Well, I don't get it. What part of that is all right? These are people that have not woken up. Not woken up. And even sober, they're in here sober and they're still asleep. I woke up a little bit that day. Now, let me tell you a quick story about a day I hadn't woke up yet. I was working this job in Anaheim and I was sober at the time. And besides being an alcoholic, I'm a full-blown hypochondriac. I got everything that comes out, right? You know, somebody gets something, I got it. You know, when that Filipino flu thing was going on, I was in the Filipino market. I had it for weeks after that. I mean, I was frightened. So anyway, I'm working on this job one time, and I put on some weight, right? I'd put on some weight, and I got hit in the stomach with a metal bar. But it wasn't the stomach. It was below the stomach, right? It was the area that's below this and above this. That little area that, it used to be my stomach, now it's the area below my stomach. Anyway, so, and I'm not really seeing that area a lot, you know what I mean? If you know what I mean, right? So I got hit with this bar in the stomach, and it hurt pretty bad, right? But I'm walking it off. You know, I walk it off. A couple of weeks later, I'm up in Malibu, and I take my shirt off. This 2 weeks later, I take my shirt off, and this guy goes, whoa, what happened to you there? I go, what, right? So I'm freaking, right? I run into the bathroom. I lift my stomach up, and here's this big black bruise underneath my stomach. I go, oh, my God, I've got to go to the hospital right now. Come on. It was 2 weeks later. 2 weeks later, I was walking around incapable of seeing that I was injured. Let me ask you something. How long were you walking around with alcoholism before you realized it? How long were you walking around injured and incapable of seeing the truth? And truth about what you were and what was going on and the truth about your disease. And when you really woke up and looked in the mirror and realized all the lives you had damaged, the people you had hurt, the things you had lost, all that stuff, when you really woke up and it hit you, and I bet it wasn't your very first day here, when you really woke up. That day outside with this guy talking back and forth, I said, I'll go to the meeting. I woke up just a little bit, and I said, all right, how often have I been drunk lately? I thought I'd been drunk every day. As far as I can remember, I've been drinking, smoking a little weed, or doing something every day for as long as I could remember. I thought, all right, I'll go to the meeting. And I went to the meeting. And the meeting was at this place called the Rap Center in downtown Long Beach. And it was the kind of meeting where you push your shopping cart up out front and go inside. And if a girl had most her teeth, I was stoked. It was like one of those meetings, you know. And it's like, yeah, she's got 3 up front. That's hot. You know, and that, I mean, mine are gone too, so don't worry about it. So anyway,
And I remember walking into that meeting, no job, no nothing, living in my mom's house, complete mess, destroyed everything. I remember walking into my first meeting, loser, scumbag. I know that dude from school. Never get drunk with you, bro. And I'll tell you why not. I ain't like you guys. I'm a Cary Grant visiting drunk guy. That's what I'm thinking, right? It was a couple of weeks ago, I had a bad mustache and I just dyed my hair black. My wife goes, more like Robert Goulet drunk. But anyway, no offense to him. But so, I mean, that's why I'm looking. No. I'm a smooth drunk. That's what I'm thinking. Because when I go to a bar and I start drinking, the first place it hits me is right here in the cheeks. And they start getting numb. And I put a couple more drinks in me and they get real numb right here on the top and I start smiling. And I get a couple more drinks in me and all of a sudden I decide I want to take a walk. And I head down the street and it's night and I see a light on. So I walk up and knock on the door. Hey, saw the light on. Who are you guys? What are you doing in there? Yeah, you know what I mean? I'm a visiting drunk guy. That's what I am, right? I'm the kind of drunk that shows up in your picnic. It's like, do you know that dude, man? It's like, hey, give me a drink, and I like you. You give me a drink and a pill, I want to give you a hug. I love you, man. Give me a drink, a pill, and a line of cocaine, I want to start a business with you, bro. You know, that's how I think. You take that out of me, and I want you dead now, champ. And I didn't get it, and I didn't understand the disease of alcoholism. And the sad thing is, the meeting that I went to, all they talked about was symptoms, 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 symptoms. If you're brand new coming in here on a court card, I can guarantee you right now, you can walk yourself right out of Alcoholics Anonymous listening to the symptoms and the pride of the wreckage and damage we have caused. You can walk right out of here listening to that crap. Because you hear all sorts of stuff in here. You come in here and you start hearing guys going, well, I went to jail 59 times. 50, 37, 80 times. I've been to jail 80 times. You hear somebody else go, I lost 35 families. 35 families. Can't hold a job. Axe murderer. I'd wake up and at 4 o'clock in the morning before 4:01, I'd have 6 quarts drink. You know, just craziness and pride, and people wearing jail like a badge and homeless like a badge and destroying people like a badge. And you hear all that in Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's what I'm hearing, and I ain't identifying, and I ain't like you guys. And it was the same thing that happened to my father. My father came in here to AA on a court card. He'd been in World War II. He'd fought in Korea. He'd fought in Vietnam. He'd had a family. He'd paid his bills. He comes in here, and he hear these guys talking, jail, 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 jail. My dad goes, I got arrested once, and it was a mistake. It was a mistake. And then you hear these guys saying, I lost this, lost this, lost this. I lost my job, lost my job, lost my job. My dad said, I've always put food on the table for my family. I've always paid the bills. And then you hear these guys saying, I lost this, I lost this, I lost my family, lost my wife, kids, all this stuff. My dad said, I got my wife and kids. They're home and scared right now, waiting for me to get back from this meeting. Because I didn't lose any of that stuff. Symptoms, symptoms, symptoms. And that's all I heard was the symptoms. But the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous makes it very clear on what is and what is not an alcoholic. If you look in chapter 4, the agnostics, it lays it right out in the front. It says, when you want to, can you stop drinking entirely? If you quit, can you stay quit? And if you're drinking, how much control do you got over what you're taking in? That doesn't have a damn thing to do with 502s. Doesn't have a damn thing to do with losing families, losing jobs, going to jail. Have you ever tried to stop drinking before? And if you stopped, why'd you start again if it was so bad for you? And when you were drinking, how was your control thing going, champ? How was that? Could you stop at 1? Could you stop at 2? You know, when you hear this stuff all the time, and you hear guys with all this pride, and let me tell you something. You get a housewife in here, and she has 3 glasses of wine every day. Every day she has 3 glasses of wine. On Wednesday, she says, I don't want to drink that wine tomorrow. Thursday comes, she drinks it anyway, because she can't stop. No difference between that lady and a bum laying in the street with crap in his pants sucking on a short dog. It is the same disease. And are we talking about what alcoholism is really about in here, or are we just showing pride for the crap we've done to people? pride for how we've hurt people. And I come in here and I'm listening to all this stuff and I diagnosed myself non-alcoholic and I said, I'm out, and I split. And the sad thing is, nobody came up to me and stopped me. Nobody came up and said anything. You know, the trouble with that is, when the new man comes in here, how important it is for us to walk up to him and to talk to that new man, because we're probably the first people in that new man's life that aren't gonna say, what's wrong with you? What's wrong with you? I'd heard that my whole life. What's wrong with you? What's wrong with you? You know? Because we're probably the first people in that guy's life that know what's wrong with him. You know what I mean? And we don't even have to talk to him long. I mean, I know we're not supposed to diagnose anybody an alcoholic, but 5 or 10 minutes, you can spot it. You know what I mean? We just think differently. You know, my sponsor used to give me a hard time about this, and he died, so I can tell this joke now. So anyway, go to a restaurant, sitting there, lady comes in with a walker, she trips and goes down. Look around the room to see who's laughing and ask them where they're going to meetings. So, all right, sorry about that. All right, that was wrong, I'm sorry. Sorry, Jerry. Anyway, but you know what I'm saying? We just think differently. We think differently than other people, you know? So anyway, I come in there, I'm listening to all your stories, I diagnose myself non-alcoholic, and I take a walk. And I wish somebody would have just said, Jack, what are you doing here, man? What are you doing here? What are you doing in our meetings? You know, why are you here? And I would have told them why I was there and what I thought of their little meetings. And they could have said, you know what, son, before you leave, why don't you take a look in here? Take a look in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Look in the doctor's opinion, because they talk about you. They talk about a person that gets a sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once from taking that first drink. And that's what I used to get. And I didn't even need to take the drink. You know, just the thought of taking a drink would make me feel better. I'd be somewhere just stressed out, just going nuts and just, you know, just crazy and the insanity. And all of a sudden, bing, that little cocktail light would flash on. I'd go, bye-bye, I'm leaving. And I'd get in the car and go. Whosever car it was, I'm going. I head to the liquor store. On the way to the liquor store, I'm already feeling better. Already feeling better. Not one drop of booze has touched my lips, and I'm already getting relief. I walk in the liquor store. I smile. He smiles. I say, vodka, please. And he sets it down. I'm feeling 100 times better now. I walk outside. I take the cap off and throw it. You do not need the cap once the bottle's open. That is for transportation purposes only. Get rid of the cap, throw it. I take the bottle, I take the first drink, and when it goes inside me, it's like being hugged by God. It's like a pair of arms goes around me and says, it's okay now. It's okay now. I take another drink, I don't live at my mom's anymore. I take another drink, my girlfriend just got older. I take another drink, I just got a new job. Did you know I was a detective? You know, I mean, that's what happens. You take the booze out of me and I want you dead. And I didn't get it and I did not understand the disease of alcoholism. A lot of times I get talking to guys about the book and I get guys talking, new guys talking about the book, right? And they start arguing. You know, when they first, I love people that tear the big book apart. I love it dearly, you know, because it can be torn apart and I love doing it, you know. And I like when the new guys go, oh, that book contradicts itself. It says half measures of failure, nothing. And then, but you're going to be amazed before you're halfway through. They don't know what they're talking about. It's a mess. Well, because they don't understand the program. When they're talking about half measures avail us nothing, what they're basically talking about is just stopping drinking. That's the half measure that will avail us nothing. We're taught in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous that this is a threefold disease. We got a physical, a mental, and a spiritual aspect of this disease. And if you just stop drinking, you got 2/3 of this disease kicking your ass. And now you're not sedated, so how's traffic going on the 15 for you, bro? Is that running nice? How's that 10-item checkout line going when the old lady in front of you's got 14 items? You cool with that? Because you get a real alcoholic, and you pull the booze out of them, and they're not okay. They're not okay, because now they just stopped drinking, and you got the mental aspect and the spiritual aspect kicking your butt, and we got to go back and take another drink. We've got to take it. We've got no other choice. Those guys come in, when the book says half measures, it means just stopping drinking is a half measure. If you're a real alcoholic, it will avail you nothing. The other half of the measure is the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and when you're halfway through the second half, you will be amazed before you were halfway through. Anyway, so I hope I cleared that up. Not. So anyway, so I come in here, I'm listening to all your crap, I diagnose myself non-alcoholic, and I walk. I'm out of here, and I'm going to try drinking, I'm going to try stopping on my own. And I stopped a bunch of times on my own. And think about this real quick. How many times through your life have you tried to treat aspects of these disease, but not at the same time? Have you ever tried the physical, treating just the physical when you're out there by yoga and eating right and taking care of yourself? And have you ever tried it treating the spiritual by going to church and showing up? And have you ever tried to treat the mental by going to get psychiatry help and doing all that stuff? And they all failed because you didn't treat all three at the same time. So I decide I'm just going to stop drinking, and I stopped drinking. I was one of these guys that was in, out, in, out, in, out. And I remember guys say, "You're relapsed." I say, "No, I'm not. I'm drinking, bro. You go back to your program. Go back." You know, that kind of thing. I'm just drinking. And one of these times I stopped drinking, I got 30 days. 30 solid days. No meetings, no God, no nothing. 30 days. And on my 30th day, I got a job as a bartender. Because I thought that that would be a cool job to have. And on my way to work, I stopped by a friend's house to pick up some mushrooms for another friend. And I'm sitting there with this guy, and he goes, "How's it going?" And I'm bragging to this guy about how sober I am. I go, "Oh, it's going good, man. I'm in acceptance, dude. I got 30 days. It's going good. I met my mom's. Everything's good. You know, mom's good. 30 days. I got a new job. Underage girl's gone. Baby moved out. They're gone. I got a new job. Is that your bong?" Bam. Cunning, baffling, and powerful. Alcohol disguised itself as a skunk bud and hid in this dude's bong. So I love that because the old guys always go, "Is he talking about drugs?" Anyway, so I wake up and I grab and I take a bong hit. I come to with the bong in my mouth. And I think, "Oh my God, I just took a bong hit." Here I am telling this guy, "I'm sober, I'm sober, I'm sober, I'm stoned." Bam, that fast. Now, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous talks about that. It doesn't talk about bong hits, but what it talks about is strange mental blank spots while sober. Not drinking blackouts. Hey, drinking blackouts is one thing. Strange mental blank spots while sober. You see that all the time around here. You ask guys, "Well, God, how'd you get drunk?" He goes, "I don't know. I was just standing at a party. Somebody walks by and says, 'Want some wine?' I said, 'Yeah.' And I drank it. Next thing I know, I'm drunk." You hear that all the time. "I had a strange mental blank spot. I'm sober, I'm sober, I'm sober. I'm stoned. Whoa, now what? I'm not going back to AA on one bong hit." You know what I mean? It's like, come on. What am I going to do? Walk in here? "Yeah, I took a bong hit. I surrender. I'll be GSR. You know, what? It's like, are you kidding me? That ain't happening. You know what I mean? My next thought is, whoa. You overreacted about all that sober business. You got 30 days. You overreacted. Thought after that is, I'm getting a little dry from the weed. I need a little drinky poo to wash it down. Well, now, since I'm drinking and smoking weed, because it's surely going to be different this time, these mushrooms are not going to get delivered. And so I eat the whole bag. It was 5 grams. It was bad news. I went to work. I was fired within a half an hour on my first day on the job. And you know what? The sad thing is, that's not even a record around here. Are you aware of that? You know, I love it how it's like, I love it how these guys in AA, man, where the pride and the ego just comes back. I don't even know where it comes from, man. And you see these guys with these huge medallions on, and they're peacocking around AA. You know what I mean? Like, what are you trying to be? King of the drunks in here? I just got no idea, man. It's so crazy. Try this experiment. You can try it at my house. It works good down there. There's a lot of us down there, right? Go to a meeting one time and say, "Yeah, I got fired half an hour my first day on AA, my first day on the job." Someone else in the meeting will raise their hand and go, "I got fired in 15 minutes on my first day." And then someone else will raise their hand and go, "Didn't even go my first day, bro." So it's like, that's how we are around here, you know? That's what attracts the newcomers when they see us and we're idiots. You know what I mean? They walk in and they go, "God, these guys are just like me. this guy's an idiot. You know, they love that crap. Anyway, I wait for the day that I talk somewhere and newcomers don't identify. I swear to God, I hope I get that well one day. Anyway, so now I don't even know what I was talking about. Oh, yeah, so I get to work, I'm fired. Staggering around, I'm downtown, the streets of Long Beach, I'm threatening people, I'm hammered, I'm out of my mind, and God shows up. Now, God that night was riding around inside the body of a buddy of mine. Him and God are out for a little stroll, and he's an AANA guy, and he sees me, and he says, Jack, do you need some help? I go, yeah, take me to my mommy's. I'm losing it, you know, because it was getting bad by that time, right? So he takes me home, and when he takes me home, he says, we'll talk tomorrow. Well, I know what we'll talk tomorrow means. I've heard that a whole lot. I've heard that my whole life. When you're getting bailed out of jail late at night, and they bail you out, the guy driving goes, we'll talk about this tomorrow, bro. When you're getting your car out of impound at 2 o'clock in the morning because it's been towed, and you get somebody to help you, we're going to talk about this tomorrow, dude. When you're stalking somebody and you're at a phone booth, see, they don't have phone booths anymore, so it's harder to stalk. But anyway, and they come and pick you up because the cops are after you. We're going to talk about this tomorrow, bro. You know what I mean? I've heard that. It means lecture, 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 lecture. I've heard it. I've heard it a million times. And this is an AA guy telling me we'll talk tomorrow. I know what it means. Fine. He gave me a ride home. So the next day, him and I are talking, and we're talking nice on the phone. And he's not saying one thing about me being hammered. Not one thing. So I bring it up. I go, hey, I was pretty hammered last night, huh, bro? He goes, yep. I go, hey. Woo. I go, last night, huh? He goes, yep. What I was waiting for is, Jack, you're a loser. Jack, you're a scumbag. Jack, you're trash. Jack, you're an animal. I've heard it my whole life. Loser, scumbag, animal, trash. I'm waiting to hear it from this guy, because he's a we don't drink and we definitely don't be doing no mushrooms up in here either guy, right? Who's seen me coming in and out of the program, taking a big crap on the traditions and everything he loved, coming in and out, coming in late, getting a date, leaving early, all that stuff I was doing. He saw it. He saw me drunk. I'm waiting for the lecture, and it ain't coming. And I go, dude, man. I go, I blew 30 days. I lost my job. I I'm back at my mom's. He goes, I know, Jack. He goes, you know what? He goes, you're probably an alcoholic. He goes, and if you're an alcoholic, you can't stop drinking. And if you do stop, you can't stay stopped on your own power. I wish that man was still here, but he is not. On November 13th of 1988, that guy went out listening to all this crap in this room, and he did a little junkie pride business, and he ended up trying a drug he'd never tried, and he died that night in the car. That man's name was Don Langston. I owe a huge part of my sobriety to that man. I ended up getting sober on January 8th of 1989, and I don't know why. I don't know why that day God just stepped in and said, bam, you're done, champ. And he just pulled the plug. The rope came down, I grabbed it. I grabbed onto it, and I held on tight, and he pulled the plug. But I learned a ton from that relapse, because we can look back and learn from our relapses. You look in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, they talked about what they did, how this guy did this and relapsed, and this guy did this and relapsed, and what they learned. Let me tell you what I learned from that relapse, and I'm going to say it real quick. One of the first things I've learned, and it's a shame that this is so unpopular, one of the very first things I learned is this just don't drink crap. If you're brand new and you're coming into Alcoholics Anonymous and you're hurting and you're frustrated, bewildered, terrorized, and in complete despair, and you don't know what the hell is going on with your life, and you're coming in here to get help from us, and you get by somebody that says just don't drink, just get the hell away from them. That is not the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. That is not our business. You look in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and the words just don't drink just don't even appear in there. Are you aware of that? They don't even appear in there. As a matter of fact, the book says, go drink. Go get it on. Go get yourself thoroughly convinced. And when you've been whipped, terrorized, and you've done it all, and you are thoroughly convinced you're an alcoholic, and you want some real change and something to happen, then you come in here and you start working. And you start busting your ass right away if you want to stay in here. And the book says it a couple times through the book. It says, of course we don't drink. And then it also says that the man who thinks not drinking's enough is unthinking. Unthinking. There's so much more that we do around here to treat this disease. Not drinking, all that is abstinence. You can go get abstinence anywhere you want. You want to program a change, a program a life, you come in here and you do the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. A lot of times I hear guys say, you'll hear guys talking to the new man, and when the new man comes in, think about what you even say to the guy. One of the first things we say to the new man when he comes in, we say, hey, if you want to make this program, you better get a sponsor with time. You better get a sponsor with time. You want to make this deal. Well, let's look at Bill and Bob. Let's look at the founders of our program. You got a guy with 5 months, maybe 6 months. That's all he's got. And he's got Bob with no time. No time. They don't got a sponsor with time. They don't got anybody to defer to. There is nobody they can talk to about this deal. They don't got no time. What's one of the next things we tell the new man? We say, if you want to make this deal, you better go to a meeting every day. Meeting makers make it. Meeting makers make it. Meeting makers make it. Meeting makers make it. Right? Let's look at Bill and Bob. No sponsor with time and no AA meetings to go to. They can go to some Oxford group meetings. They can go to some church, but they don't got no AA to go to. What's the next thing we tell the new man? We say, you want to make this deal? You better study the book. 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 Bill and Bob, no book. No book. No sponsor with time. No AA meetings to go to, and no big book of Alcoholics Anonymous to study. So why are we sitting here 300 strong on those guys' back on a Thursday night in Las Vegas? Because of what they did. What they did. They got off their ass right away. And I get into this with guys all the time, guys studying the book. The guy says, Jack, do you know how many times it says the word and on page 52? I don't give a shit how many times it says and. I don't care how many times it says and. What I care about is what the guys were doing. They realized selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of the problem. And if they didn't start sticking a hand out to the new man right away and learning how to be of service, they were going to die. They got off their ass right away. Right away. And you'll hear guys say, we can't give away what you don't have. Of course you can't give away what you don't have. You might not be able to discuss the traditions or the concepts for world service, but as a new man, you can reach your hand out to another new man and say, I know what it feels like. I know what it feels like to shake like that. I've seen these guys at this meeting. This guy seems pretty nice. Let's get a cup of coffee. Let's sit down. Can I give you a ride? I still got a license. Can I help out? And to learn to serve right away. I'm going to close with this. This God thing is very frightening, man. When I came in here, I'd done a lot of creepy business, man. I'd been a born-again Christian before because I was trying to sleep with this girl that was one. So, you know, hey, I love Jesus too, sweetheart. Whatever you need me to say, you know. I was frightened. I was so frightened and I was so afraid of God and my concept of God was so messed up. And thank God the concept we come in here with does not have to be the concept we go out with. Not in any way. I have learned God through the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. We want to come in here and we want to understand God and then turn our will and our lives over to the care of a God that we've now understood. But how can you possibly understand a God when you don't come in here with a lot of godly attributes? You're not forgiving, loving, kind, unconditional. How could you possibly know those concepts? But by working the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, we learn forgiveness. We learn love. We learn kindness. And we can learn God through that. Bill and Bob were big fans of Emmett Fox. And that was one of the books, the Sermon on the Mount, that influenced our book. And it's real interesting. When Emmett breaks down the Lord's Prayer, when he says, forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. Emmett says, when we learn to forgive, we will feel forgiveness and we will know what forgiveness is like. And I think it's very interesting how they use the exact same words in the third step. They said, turn our will and our life over to the care of God as we understand God. Along the way to understanding, do these things. Do these things and God will appear. Real quick, I'll close with this. I've always wanted to be baptized. I've never been able to. I went from church to church to church looking for it. I wasn't seeing the power that I'm seeing here. I'd hear them talking about lepers thousands of years ago. I sit in rooms full of lepers, man. You know, I sit in rooms where guys come in with sores all over them and with no pants and teeth knocked out, walking like this. And a year or two later, they're back with their families and they're working and they're clean cut. And you can't even recognize them. They seem so completely different. They're healed through this power in here. And I'm thinking I want to be baptized, but I'm not seeing it. What am I going to do? And I thought, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to get one of these priests in AA to baptize me. Because I see them sneaking around in here. They're hiding out. You see them, right? So anyway, so I come up to Father Leo, right? I see Leo, and I'm friends with Leo. I go, hey, Leo, man. I go, will you baptize me, bro? And I'm thinking maybe we can go to the coffee bar and get a little dunk, whatever we got to do back there. And Leo laughs. He goes, yeah, Jack, baby, I'd love to do it. You know, he's like a little Dudley Moore-looking thing, man. He's that very small. And he goes, you know, anybody can baptize you. Anybody can baptize you, baby. I go, what? He goes, anybody can baptize you. Well, I didn't know that. You know what I mean? I didn't know that. Something of God, who do I want to baptize me? I sponsor this Jewish guy, Jordan. Maybe we can get some robes and go down the river. I'm tripping, you know, thinking, what am I going to do, right? And then I think, you know what? My little girl's never been baptized. My little one. My six-year-old's never been baptized. So I'm at home one night, and I tell my wife, I say, I'm going to go baptize the kid. She's like, what? I go, yeah. So I get this water, and I fill this bowl full of water, and I say, Father, please bless this water. I go, you know what I want to do with this water? Please bless it. And I walk into my daughter's bedroom, and I say, sweetheart, and she's laying up on her bunk. I go, do you mind if I talk to you about God? And she goes, no, Dad. I go, do you know how much God loves you? And she goes, yeah. I go, and you know how much we need to care for each other and that we're a family and how important it is that we love and stick a hand out. And she goes, I know, Dad. I go, and do you see how we bring people into our house and we love these people and they get their families back and we grow together and we're all connected. And she goes, I know that, Dad. I go, and you know how much God loves you? And she goes, yeah, I know. I go, do you mind if I mark you as one of God's kids? And she goes, no. So I dip my fingers in the water and I say, I baptize you in the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. And I lean down and I give her a big kiss and a hug and I say, I love you. I love you, sweetheart. And I turn around and I start to walk away and she goes, can I do you? I go, yeah, hit it, baby. Come on, get it. And I put the water out and she dipped her fingers in and she set it perfectly. And I ended up getting baptized by my six-year-old. And I'll tell you, I couldn't have asked for a better thing. And real quick, my daughter is not one of the promises of Alcoholics Anonymous. When you stand up here and say you got money in your pocket, your new house, your car, the promises are coming true, you do the new man a disservice. Those are not the promises of Alcoholics Anonymous. We do not all get our families back, new cars, new jobs, money in our pockets. What we get is the ability to live without those things. You hear people say the message in AA is one day at a time. No, that is not the message. That is how we work the program one day at a time. The real message in Alcoholics Anonymous is contented, long-term, useful sobriety. And I want to thank you for having me.